Hey friends, welcome back. Today, I am so excited to bring on Dr. Jim to the podcast. So Dr. Jim began his medical journey at the age of 16, where he became a certified EMT. Too young to legally be hired as an EMT, Jim volunteered his time at a local emergency room and helped in ride-alongs in the ambulances on actual 911 calls. Wanting to pursue a career in medicine, Jim went on to complete his Bachelor's of Science degree in Molecular, Cellular, and Developmental Biology at the University of California, Santa Cruz. During this time, he trained in a form of jiu-jitsu, earning a second degree brown belt. Through his training in jiu-jitsu, he earned certification as a massage therapist and yoga instructor. He went on to complete his Master's of Traditional Chinese Medicine at Five Branches University in Santa Cruz, California. This was a 3.5-year program involving acupuncture, massage therapy, dietetics, Tai Chi, Qigong, and Western medicine. He went on to complete his doctorate in acupuncture and Chinese medicine in 2019 from Pacific College of Oriental Medicine. Jim has been in private practice since 2002 and has devoted most of his postgraduate studies in the area of functional medicine. He has acted as a mentor for his colleagues in this field and was recently awarded the Flame of Knowledge Award from the Karazhan Institute for his dedication and command of advanced principles in functional medicine. Aside from his clinical practice, Jim is a content expert and educator in the field of functional medicine. He has developed continuing education courses for his acupuncture colleagues and is a course designer and professor of functional blood chemistry at Five Branches University for the acupuncture doctoral program. In today's episode, you guys are going to learn so much. I am so excited because we are going to walk through everything from what is acupuncture, if you're not familiar with it. We are going to talk about how to incorporate acupuncture, functional medicine, and neurology all into one practice, if necessary. We're going to talk about autoimmune issues, and what it's like to work with a provider who is going to sort of dig deep, especially when it comes to the blood chemistry and these blood panels. And for those of you who have had a ton of blood work done and everything seems, quote, normal, then this is the episode for you to learn something new. And I'm so excited. So here we go. Welcome to the Health Uncovered podcast, your go-to podcast for all things health, healing, and what to do next on your health journey. I'm your host, Mercedes Cook, a doctor of chiropractic and a diplomate in chiropractic cranial cervical junction procedures. Each week, my guest and I will be uncovering treatment options and health tips to help you get to the root cause of your health issues. If you're tired of seeing doctor after doctor with no answers, then the show is for you. You'll learn all kinds of healthcare options that you may have not known existed that will help you move forward on your healing journey more confident than ever. I invite you to stay open and curious. All right, let's get into today's episode. Okay, everybody, welcome to another guest episode of the Health Uncovered podcast. I am so excited because today I have a really amazing provider who is actually located in the building just next to me. His name is Dr. Jim. He is a doctor of acupuncture, and he also ties in functional medicine and neurology into his practice. So today we are going to learn more about what that means, the type of people he works with, and just give you some more insight on especially acupuncture because we haven't had an acupuncturist on the show yet. So Dr. Jim, we are so excited to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Super happy to be here.
Now, for anyone who is not familiar with acupuncture in general, could you first start by just explaining what it is and what the benefits are?
Absolutely. You know, it's actually kind of a big question and sort of a loaded question because it depends on who you ask. There's certainly some really cool, like modern research that is coming out, I would say slowly, that really demonstrates neurological changes. And, you know, we can define it in very different ways. But we have to remember that it's evolved 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. You know, it's really an ancient modality. And so they didn't really understand things like, you know, what is a virus? Or, you know, they didn't have electron microscopes or anything back then. So they came up with this really eloquent way, this model of understanding the body in relationship to the environment. And so the acupuncture is kind of how we're labeled, but really we're practitioners of traditional Chinese medicine. which involves herbs and acupuncture and body work and diet and energy work like Tai Chi or Qigong, you know, so it's a really dynamic modality.
Yes, yes, exactly. Because I know, like you said, it is really hard, similar to chiropractors. If you go to you as an acupuncturist versus another doctor of acupuncture, you may get completely different experiences and modalities. So I think it's more of like the theories behind what's actually going on with your nervous system when you receive acupuncture and like what things are possible.
This was a really good example because it was right when I started getting into functional blood chemistry back in the day. And you can become very centric and that's all you see. And then like you just want to work up everybody's blood sugar and thyroid and all that good stuff. But there was a woman who came in and she was an oboe player and she was in a symphony and was losing dexterity in her tongue. Apparently the oboe players, they have to flick their tongue a little bit on the double reed to make a flutter. And she was missing the notes. And so she was going to lose her seat on the symphony and was, you know, quite upset and panicky. And so as I got into her history, I learned that her husband had passed away, you know, about 3 or 4 years previous to that. And then soon after that, her son died slowly under her care. And it was a horrific experience for her. And so I had to think back into my Chinese medical theory. And we learned that the heart, the spirit, or the Shen in Chinese, blossoms onto the tongue. Okay, so it's just this picturesque way of thinking about it. If you, let's say, you know, you saw somebody tragically gunned down in front of you, you might be rendered speechless, right? This is kind of how they think. And so I thought to myself, how do I help this woman, right? Oh, I need to work on heart chi. So whatever that means in mainstream model, I don't know. It's the system says we have the system. We have a heart channel. We have a pericardium channel. These are energetic, you know, centers or meridians in the body that we can access the nervous system. If you overlay that with like functional MRIs, there's data there. There's interesting correlations there. But really, what were we doing? I sat with her. I listened to her. You know, I touched her. Right? I cared for her. Just all that by itself is working with spirit and with heart. And then the acupuncture points and then some herbs. Well, you know, it took about 6 sessions, but she got her dexterity back and played me a lovely tune.
That's amazing.
It really is amazing to when you can just define something. I also think about it sort of like algebra, you know, like if you set X equal to 5 and you just keep X equal to 5 the whole time, it's going to work out. So it doesn't matter if we call it a wind heat invasion, like what's wind heat in a mainstream model? It's the ramblings of a lunatic, really. You know, but no, wind, it comes on quickly. It changes direction. We're talking about a common cold. You start with like a sniffly nose and a headache and, you know, and sore muscles, and then it turns into a sore throat and green phlegm and a cough, right? And so we define it. We have herbs for wind. We have herbs for heat, you know? So it's just this really eloquent model that simplifies very complex things.
Okay, I have a question that I think kind of goes along with this, but I remember my first, it was a couple years ago, it was the first time I went to an acupuncturist, and like learning about the qi, can you explain that to us?
Qi, yeah, yeah. So qi, I mean, body energy, right? A lot of different modalities throughout history have had their version of it. It can sound kind of woo-woo, but it is something that actually is testable in a lot of ways. If you check the electrical potential across the skin, you can get a measurement. And if you put that same little device over an acupuncture point, it has a greater conductivity. So we know that there's this, like there's these, if you want to call them electrical, I don't know. It's more subtle than basic electricity, right? There are centers on the body that are just very reactive to those types of stimulation. So you can create these distant changes, whether that's actually qi coursing through these so-called meridians, or it's just a beautiful model. To me, it doesn't matter because it's a model, right? We have a way of understanding it. So body energy, I mean, in Chinese medicine, it courses through 12 main meridians or channels. You've probably seen the charts, those lines attaching your pinky toe to your eyeballs, for example. Sometimes if you can just give somebody a good foot rub, it might make their headache feel better, right? Because it's sort of all connected. So it's really about this notion of body energy. And is there too little? Is there deficiency? Is there too much in excess? Or is it stagnated? As a chiropractor, you deal with a lot of pain, I'm sure, you know, be that cervical pain in your upper cervical specialty or not. But we would look at that as a qi stagnation. I've got a good amount of upper cervical pain and, you know, I've had a lot of head injuries. I have stagnated qi. It's stuck and it hurts. So ideally, the points, the acupuncture points, move the qi. It creates smooth qi. Where there's stagnation, there's pain. So in Chinese, we have this saying, pu tong su tong, tong su pu tong, right? That was like the catch line of my acupuncture school. It means where there's stagnation, there is pain. And anytime there's pain, there'll always be stagnation.
I like that.
So it's a very moderating modality. It's acupuncture helps the body remember what it needs to do. We're inherently wise entities, yes? I mean, our body wants to thrive, homeostasis. So I think the needles don't do anything other than remind it what it really should be doing and how it should be flowing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm really curious, and now is the perfect time. I've always wanted to ask an acupuncturist this question, which is, have you heard of the term called innate intelligence? Do you think, because in my chiropractic world, like our beliefs are like philosophical beliefs on like what the body is capable of and, you know, how we're made to heal when given the right tools or not having any interference. I've always wondered if like our version of innate intelligence, making sure everything from the brain to the rest of the body is flowing properly and then things work, if that is essentially an extension or potentially even the same thing as qi in Chinese medicine. What do you think about that?
I think that it's absolutely related and involved, no doubt about it. I think that the qi kind of should be flowing evenly through the channels. And so if that's happening in that greater sense, then yes, I would call that innate intelligence, right? Yeah, but qi itself, I don't know if that is the intelligence. I think that is sort of the energy or the blood that defines the intelligence, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no.
If we may philosophize a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always just, ever since, again, I learned about acupuncture and like started learning about some of the background of it, I've always just been curious with like our version and our beliefs on innate intelligence versus like what you guys call qi. Anyways, I definitely think that there's some connection there for sure, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely. And it is fascinating to see how it relates to different modalities, such as like Ayurvedic medicines, or, you know, if you think about just the basic chakra system in a yogic sense, these are all acupuncture points. They're all part of that conception vessel, or otherwise known as the Ren channel down the front. And also on the back, the chakras are aligned on the back as well. So we have points on both sides. So the ancients were all onto it. And literally by trial and error. So I think that's where things like acupuncture gets a lot of scrutiny, where it's like, oh, well, it must just be placebo. First of all, as if there's something wrong with placebo. I mean, placebo is a very viable option. It's safe and effective in times, but it tests way better than placebo. But there is this pattern in the background that is repeated over time. And literally, the ancients just kept trying things and seeing what worked. I'm sure there was a lot of criminals and peasants that died because they tried this herb that they were made to try. Or, you know, in ancient China, it's like, here, you eat this mushroom and we'll see what happens. Sad, but it got us to where we are. So the things that are in the pharmacy now, they worked. There's pharmacology there. We might call it a wind-clearing herb, but that just means it's antimicrobial.
Now, what are like the most common things that people come seek out acupuncture? Like, why do they come to you for acupuncture? Like, what's typically going on?
I think similar to you, bread and butter would be pain and injury. Some people just respond better to certain modalities, you know? So what we do overlaps in a lot of ways. But certainly all kinds of like female disorders, menstrual irregularities, anything also with the gut is a very common thing, digestive issues. And I was listening to one of your podcasts recently and you're talking about pooping. We ask a lot of pooping questions as well, because it does tell us a lot, right?
Totally.
Yeah, we get into the nitty gritty. How's your period? How's your poops?
Yeah.
All that stuff. So
our bodies really are, I know what episode you're talking about, and our bodies are amazing. That's why I tell people things that happen to us every single day, like our bowel movements, and then for women, every single month, your period, they give you so much information about how healthy and how well or not well your body is working. So take that information, like utilize it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's really cool.
I wrote an article a long time ago for a men's website. It was called Morning Wood versus Morning Tofu. and it was about the male morning erection and just how telling that is, right? Because if things like that start to falter, then it's suggestive, right?
Yeah, for sure. I know one of your big things in your practice, which is what I want to get into, is incorporating acupuncture, with functional medicine, and with neurology. I know that's a big part of what you love and do. So can you give us some insight? What does that mean? How do you incorporate acupuncture, functional medicine, and neurology? And what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the answer is, honestly, I don't always incorporate them. Sometimes, you know, we have these big bags of tricks, right? I've been in practice since 2002. And so that's a lot of time to kind of like develop skills. And a basic intake helps me figure out very quickly what that person is there for and what they want. Because some people don't want anything to do with blood chemistry or doctory stuff, and they just want to talk chi and acupuncture. And that's the way in. That's how we get into that case. And so sometimes it's just acupuncture. If it's something simple like, I hurt my wrist, okay, acupuncture. You know, we can get into blood chemistry later, perhaps. But a lot of times, I would say my focus these days really is on the functional blood chemistry piece. I've been a mentor in that field for a while. And so, you know, and I'm a professor of blood chemistry. And so a lot of my students refer me those cases now too. So that might be long distance. I might not have the ability to touch that person in real life. I see the blending of the two, though, is let's just say we're working up a larger blood chemistry type case, a functional medicine type case. They've got some kind of a bigger medical condition. And stress physiology, for example, might be driving that. You know, we know that their work is tough and their relationship at home might be tough and they've got this autoimmune condition. And we have to start thinking about what are the drivers? What is your driver versus my driver? We might have the same condition, but we have very different pathologies in the background. So I see that things like acupuncture as being that tool that we can use on top of everything else. It just helps smooth the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. Again, kind of bringing an ancient model back into a modern concept. It's one thing that acupuncture is really shown to do is to activate parasympathetic nervous system, which is, of course, the rest and digest. So if somebody's in sympathetic overdrive, they're fighting for their lives every day. Their body thinks that there's a famine is happening, that something's wrong. It's very difficult to recover from chronic illness when that's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
So I can see it helping that way.
Can you give us an example of like a more, not like a straightforward case of just like pain, but where someone does have like an example of an autoimmune condition or something that you commonly treat? And maybe when it is appropriate to incorporate all the different tools that you have, could you kind of walk us through a case like that?
Yeah. Okay. So again, the most common autoimmune, if you want to call it a disease, is Hashimoto's thyroid. And again, you were talking about that recently with the naturopathic doctor, I believe. Nice interview, by the way.
Thank you.
Let's just say we have this. And what that means is that your immune system no longer knows the difference between self tissue, in this case, thyroid tissue, and non-self tissue, for example, a bacteria or a virus or a parasite or something like that. And so it's targeting that tissue for attack. That's great. We can focus on the thyroid, but there's the physiology in the background that also makes a lot of problems happen, right? It sets that person into that stress physiology mode. And then guess what? They're chewing up more blood sugar, right? So now they're struggling to keep their blood sugar stable all day long because their body's inflamed. It's under attack, doesn't know what's happening. And so it starts to burn up basic fuel like glucose. So this is a person who has already been through the ringer, right? This is a classic patient. They've been to every practitioner in town. Nobody can figure it out. And they find themselves in my clinic or your clinic or wherever they're at that point. And they've been through it. They're eating perfectly. They're exercising. They're meditating. Like, they, you know, they are the star patient. But doggone it, their blood sugar keeps crashing and their Hashimoto's is out of hand. So we have to start thinking about what's driving it. If we start looking into the neurology, of which admittedly I'm rather new. I don't consider myself a functional neurologist, but I know enough to know when a neurological mechanism is present, right? Either I can help them or I refer them. So let's just say in this theoretical case, we look back into their history and they've had a series of head traumas. So a damaged brain, an injured brain, inherently uses more glucose than a non-injured brain. So just going through their day, they can't keep up with their glucose demands. So we need to start working on healing brain at the same time as making sure their blood sugar and diet is right and making sure their exercise is right and moderating stress physiology, perhaps with acupuncture, maybe herbs, that kind of thing. And then anything else that we can think of that's doing it, you know, like sleep. And, you know, and this is really the mark of like a functional medical doctor, right? Is we have to manage just monumental amounts of information And I like to think of it as sort of like this big spider web with different attachments. How do we tug on the attachments just right to make the biggest impact? You can't always tug on all of them, maybe three. So I think where the people go wrong most of the time, and I mean people on their own or sometimes other practitioners, is that they focus on one thing. They're like, well, I'm just going to work on gut, which can make a huge impact. Absolutely. I work on gut constantly. But sometimes we have blinders on and we're just working on gut. But really, there's a brain injury that's making the gut worse, right? So that's kind of how I would blend it in. I don't know if there's a right, perfect way to do it. It's sort of, I work in a very fluid way. I don't work on a protocol-based way, which is how we're taught, quite honestly. We're taught protocols.
Yeah, we're taught protocols, but I feel like the longer that you're in practice, you really, like you said, you accumulate tools over time, and then you figure out just the protocol is not going to work for everyone or a lot of people that you see. So you have to kind of manage with a system that you've kind of created. And I think that, like you said, ruling out whether it's blood chemistry, whether it there's a neurology problem, a gut problem, because now I feel like with providers, and it makes sense, a lot of providers really dive into like one specialty and they think they only have this one tool. So this one tool is like the answer to everything, which admittedly, you know, even for me, like upper cervical is my specialty and my thing. But that is why I put so much effort into learning what other people do, because I'm going to offer the structural upper cervical side of things. And then I'm going to refer to you and my other providers that I know and trust to deal with some of the other strings, if you will, like you said. So that way the person can actually get better and not just like see a little bit of progress and then plateau and have nothing happen, which I feel like happens for a lot of people. So
absolutely. It takes a team.
Yeah. Takes a team. I thought that was a great example, especially like the autoimmunity stuff, because I don't think a lot of people would necessarily think like, oh, I'm having a thyroid issue. Let me go consult with an acupuncturist about this problem. And I don't even know if I would have necessarily thought that before having this conversation with you. So I think that that's really cool. That gives me another idea when someone has potentially already worked with a naturopath. They've already worked with, you know, some other provider, but maybe they've never had a combination of functional medicine and acupuncture and like tried that combination of things, because you could take 10 people that have Hashimoto's and they're not all going to respond to the same things, obviously. So I think that's really great. Could you walk us through and you already explained a little bit, because you're going to sort of pick and choose what modalities people need. But for example, I want people to get an understanding of, they come into your office and they're looking for help. Like, what does it look like to work with you? Do you just start with a phone consult? Do they come into your practice? Do you do an exam? Like, what does it look like?
I always am open to offering, you know, like just a complimentary like introduction call, usually about 15 minutes, just to see if it's a good match. I would say 90% of the time, yeah, it's a good match. I'm honest and I think I might be able to help them. So we go forward. There's certain cases that I don't tend to take on. You know, I'm not a specialist in cancer, for example. I think you have to be to do them the right service. I'm not a specialist in Lyme disease. That's a really, really tough one. So, you know, there's some screening. And that's kind of an interesting concept as a practitioner. That takes a little maturity too, to say like, yeah, I'm not the best match for you.
Absolutely.
And just be able to walk away. The early hungry ones will take everything, right? Having said that, I set up an initial consultation. That's typically an hour. And we go over some pretty extensive intake papers. I do include a lot of neurology type paperwork, because that might be the lead to how we would do an exam. Well, how do we want to spend our time and money, quite frankly? I always tell people, like, I want to watch out for your physical health, but I also want to be mindful of your financial health. So try to be as efficient as possible. And not everybody needs a neuro exam, for example. But typically, I'll do an hour-long intake. We'll go over everything on the paperwork. We'll talk about any blood tests that they might have already had. I might have some recommendations right off the bat. Having said that, a functional blood chemistry blood workup is more extensive than a typical mainstream model doctor's panel. Sometimes they bring in things from their naturopaths, and those are awesome. They're always great. But we just need more. So I usually will just start with a new panel. And the panel that I order, it's $225, and it's pretty extensive. You know, there's always room for a really exotic stuff, but we dig in pretty good with all the fundamentals. If anything on that list is off, we have to kind of stop the presses. We got to work on those things. I don't really care why you're here, right? I say that compassionately. It's first things first. Functional blood chemistry is about finding the base pathology. Is it blood sugar imbalance? Is it thyroid imbalance? Is there a problem with your red and white blood cells? Are you showing chronic inflammatory things? Is your homocysteine elevated? Like, all those can drive something like an autoimmune disease. And I don't know if you've talked about this in the past either, but maybe this is a good time. A functional blood chemistry workup is very much the same as a mainstream. We use the same labs. So I do all mine through LabCorp, mainstream labs, but we're going to look at different reference ranges. So this is a really important piece to understand out there. When you get your blood drawn, the mainstream model is really more of an illness, injury, pathology-based system. And we have to appreciate how those reference ranges were designed. And we would hope that it would be based on physiology. It's not. It's based on the average of the population of people to get their blood drawn. So over the past 50 years or so, we have absolutely gotten sicker as a population. And we are absolutely on more drugs that change our reference ranges, basically. So if you're looking at the thyroid, the TSH reference range for LabCorp is 0.45 to 4.5. You don't have to know what that means. But because there's so many people on Synthroid and levothyroxine, which is a synthetic T4, that has messed up our averages. So it's made a really wide bell curve. It's made that reference range massive. So the functional range is 1.8 to 3. So there's a lot of symptoms that you can experience if you're outside the functional range, but still quote unquote normal.
That is something that every single human needs to know, Dr. Yes. Jim. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. And just through me and my own, you know, I'm very curious and like always trying to have optimal health. So sometimes as a provider, I think that these are things that people know, but I'm sure you get this a lot in your practice too. Everybody wants to say, well, oh yeah, I got my blood work done already. Everything's normal. And I want to be like, is it really though?
Yeah. You have to say it in a kind of a sensitive way.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And so
it's a trick.
That was such a great explanation. So if you did not catch or understand what Dr. Jim just said, just scroll back and listen to it again. Because if you keep getting blood work and your ranges are normal, and I actually didn't even think or put together the fact that obviously these normal ranges are put together by everyone that gets blood work. And because the amount of people that are on synthetic hormones, synthetic, you know, medication, makes sense that our ranges are skewed and not set up to like what's actually optimal and healthy versus what is like normal. As we know, most things normal are not healthy.
Yeah. Normal America, not so great.
Not so great. No. So yes, thank you for explaining that. That's amazing.
Absolutely. So if you look at the same panel through a functional medical lens where we're using different reference ranges, maybe you're a little bit dysglycemic, meaning your blood sugar is not stable. That could be high or low. Maybe you're a little bit hypothyroid. Maybe you have mild anemia and, you know, you're not dragging around the floor anemic. But if you start adding up those three major pillars of physiology and you have an immune system that doesn't know the difference between self and non-self and it's triggered, like that's enough. That's enough to trigger it. Why am I not feeling better? Why is everything normal, but my hair's falling out and I'm not going to the bathroom and I'm tired all the time and my libido's in the toilet?
So you mentioned, just to kind of get back, we were talking about what it's like to work with you. And you mentioned, depending on what comes up in the consultation, that will guide you on what you have to do for any examination process or potentially the blood work. So, yes. Okay. And once you do that,
working with me, you'll get a PhD in yourself. So watch out.
Love that.
I attract people who really want information and understanding. Because, you know, the thing that makes me so happy to do what I do is to see those light bulbs go on. And like for somebody to really get it, that makes me get up every day for sure. Absolutely. So that's what you can expect in a nutshell for me. It's we're gonna get some data and we're gonna understand it.
I love it.
With respect to, I know I get all giddy about this stuff. Sorry. So with respect to like an evaluation, like I'll do some basic stuff. Like we're going to look for oxygen saturation because that makes a difference. If you're not oxygenating, boy, we better fix that. You know, we're going to look for blood pressure and all that just basic stuff because, hey, I'm a medical professional. And if I'm the last person that you saw, I better not be a bozo and miss it. That's something I have to remind my acupuncture students about because in acupuncture, we're not really trained that way. But hey, we're it sometimes, right? So yes. I tell them, dust off your stethoscopes and listen to their lungs, listen to their gut, you'd be surprised what you find. And then that might be a referral to a doctor, a medical doctor. They might need it. But let's just say we see some things on the brain form that's concerning. You know, that would be an extra hour. I would need to talk to them and really add on an hour to our intake, maybe schedule them another day, but run them through a good 60 minutes of just neurological tests. That can be sensory. That can be cognitive. I'll watch them walk. This is a one that gets people every time. I'll have them walk down the hall and observe how their arm swing is and their gait. And then I'll say, okay, now do it. Recite the alphabet, but skip every other letter. And everybody goes like, oh my gosh, you know, because what we're doing is activating frontal lobe while trying to coordinate our movements. And what you see is a lot of breakdown in movement. And so that shows the weaknesses. That can impact blood sugar. That can impact anxiety. That can impact all your digestive functions if things like that are going on. So it's fascinating what you can see. A basic drunk test, like a field drunk test, like a cop would do, tells us quite a lot.
And then during these first 1 to 2 appointments, you're kind of uncovering, what does this patient need? What are we going to work on? And then from there, is it typical that people see you, you know, obviously, if it's a more complex case, they're going to be working with you for longer. If it's something really simple, maybe they only see you a couple times. But on average, how long do you feel like you work with your patients?
So the way it works is we'll get that initial kind of push in. You know, we'll have the follow-up. We'll have the, you know, the meeting where we're going to talk it all out and then create a plan. Usually it takes me a day or 2 days, and I will write up a pretty lengthy report of findings detailing all of my findings. These are my notes. These are actually just my notes that I write to myself. They can be a bit doctory, but in the impression section and the recommendation section, I try to make it more friendly, you know, and I'm always there to help interpret it. But I want you to have the same thing that I have so that when we look at them together, we're on the same page. And if you want to share it with another practitioner, then that's very appropriate to share it with them too. So you'll get this big report. And when it comes to the recommendations, I like to do it in phases of care. So phase 1, blood sugar, sleep, meditation, you know, some whatever we determined, right? Maybe therapy or whatever we got to work on physiology, right? And the mental health. And then that'll usually get us through the first 2 to 3 months. I like to do a short retest on a few key items at about 8 weeks. So it's like, hey, if I'm giving you support for your blood sugar or your elevated homocysteine levels, did we have an impact? Because sometimes you make an impact on the paper before you feel the difference in the symptoms. So it's important to keep everybody on point. And then we would refer back to our phases. All right, how have you been on your diet and lifestyle? Oh, Dr. Jim, I've been pretty good, but I haven't been able to give up the cookies. I know I'm supposed to be gluten-free because of my Hashimoto's. I've been like 90%. I'm like, okay, great. We're on phase 1.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We're still here.
Yeah. I have no judgment. It's your path. You know, it's just here we are, phase 1. And so that'll extend or determine how the case progresses. But, you know, sometimes it's appropriate after several months where it's like, God, I feel so much better, but there's still a little something. Okay, well, how about we look at phase 2 recommendations? So what do you say we order this this gluten cross-reactive food panel? Because I know you're gluten-free. You've been awesome at it. But what do you know? Dairy and all the gluten-free grains, they all look like gluten to the immune system. So maybe that's a problem. Maybe that's pushing your Hashimoto. Let's refine it now. So that can extend into the future. Usually the follow-ups are much shorter. They're, you know, half hour, either in person or a Zoom thing. Unless we get some cool data, then we just take it as it comes. Chronic cases. I can work with somebody for years, especially in autoimmunity, because their triggers change over time. They might move to a new place. Maybe that place has mold now. Just depends on the case.
Well, that's a fun thing about our health. I try to get my patients to understand this. It doesn't matter what you're working through or what providers you're working with. Like, there's always work to be done. Like, we don't ever arrive at this like optimal level where there's just nothing left to be done, right? There's either maintenance, so you still have things that you have to be working on and doing, or something new comes up. So having providers, you know, like Dr. Jim on your team that you can go to when something pops up or something new happens, like, just cool that you have all these tools to kind of reassess and be like, all right, what does this person need now? Because things are going to come up. Like, we can't avoid being exposed to different things, right?
Right.
It's going to come up. So I want to know what is, and this is just more to get to know you a little bit better. Like, for you, what is the best part of your work? Like, what do you enjoy the most about it?
I kind of already touched on it a little bit, but I am a people person and I love to connect with people generally in not shallow ways. So, but in a professional setting, it's an intimate experience. It really is. I'm hearing about their lives, right? And I am a very empathic person. I feel that with them. I really like to have that connection because if I really feel what they're experiencing, and that gets back to some of the energetic concepts, maybe as an acupuncturist, if I'm energetically in tune with that patient, then we're going to have a much better relationship. And so I think that developing that kind of experience with my patients is something that really fires me up. I really enjoy that. I would say a second to that is being the guy, this is maybe a little bit more ego-based, being the person who finally figured it out, right? After they can't tell you, and we're picking on Hashimoto's a lot, but I can't tell you how many people have been on thyroid hormones for 25 years and not one doctor has ever said, oh, this is autoimmune. Because if that's where they're stopping, then they're missing the point. Point is autoimmunity, not thyroid. So I like being that. That one is a mixed blessing for me because I'm both blessed about it, but I also get a little bit angry about it. Because what in the world did that person have to come to an acupuncturist for to learn this? I say that with some humbleness, right? In the grand scheme of the medical system, I'm a peon. I'm not this big fancy medical doctor that people associate with truth and wisdom, right? And knowledge. I'm an alternative doctor. So I feel like I'm both blessed and I'm sort of a little bit angry at the system at the same time.
That's fair. It's very fair. What would you say, Dr. Jim, is the hardest part of the work that you do?
Not being able to help somebody. For any number of reasons. That could be because they are not willing to do the work. That certainly happens. That's a mature concept as a practitioner to accept that you can't help everybody, but it doesn't mean it's easy. Sometimes it is me. I don't know. I don't know how to help them. I've gone through everything in my toolkit and they're still not getting better. It could just be that the physiology is so dug in that they're not responding.
Yeah, absolutely. That happens.
That's hard. And then, you know, the ones that you think back about 5 years ago and you're like, dang, I missed it. I wish I could have helped them better. Now I know, right?
Now you know. Yep. Yeah. What do you typically do? Let's say this is one of those cases where you're like, they are putting in the work and it's just not moving the needle. Like there's just not an answer that your toolbox has. What do you do?
I talk it out. I talk honestly with them. I say, look, here's what we've done. Here's what's been done in the past. I don't know that I can offer any more. So before I said, I'm always here for you to be a resource and to be a sounding board, perhaps. Because a lot of times what I do for people too is help coordinate their medical care. Because I can see the bigger picture with them and then we communicate well. So I'm just a good tool for that. Like I just had to refer somebody the other day to a functional neurologist because I just knew that there was probably a neurological decline concern. Early dementia that I think was sabotaging the case and might be the focus of it. So yeah, so I had that talk and she was very happy that I was honest with her about that. It's not an easy topic. I think we're looking at dementia and got her to a place that I think would be better.
Yeah. I love asking other providers this question because very similar to you, it is hard having conversations with patients where things aren't changing. They're not going as planned, but I can't tell you the amount of times that I've sat down with someone and been like, look, you being in alignment is obviously, it's great for your body and your health, but how you're feeling and moving things forward and your goals for coming in here are not improving. And so it's your choice if you want to continue this, but here's my recommendation. This is what I want you to look into, go do. And the amount of patients that still continue to see me, but go like see these other providers, they are so grateful. They're so grateful that I didn't just like keep seeing them over and over again and give them nothing else to look into. And they're so grateful that I was willing to, like you said, have the conversation and just be honest. Like, I think there's other things that we have to look into. People appreciate that so much because they are kind of gaslighted quite a bit in the Western medical system. And so if we just give people options and like things to look into, they're so grateful. So I love that you do that as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, Dr. Jim. A couple things before we wrap up right now. I really would love for you to share about your podcast that you do And also just where our listeners can follow you or find you if they want to look you up and do a consultation. So could you share just where we can find you?
Yes. Yeah, so my clinic name, as well as my podcast name, is A Functional Approach. Because when I came up with that, I was really trying to think about how I want to name my business. I moved in the last year and I rebranded, but that's what you get. So I was like, that's the name. You get a functional approach, right? Be that acupuncture, which I consider the oldest functional medicine in the world, or blood chemistry or what have you. But A Functional Approach is my business name and my podcast name. And it's on all the major platforms, Spotify and Apple and all that. My website, I was lucky enough back in the day to grab functionalmedicine-san diego. So if you go to Functional Medicine San Diego, you'll find me there as well.
That is amazing.
And then you and I are both located really conveniently here in Mission Valley. That's kind of a nice little spot for the local folks.
Yes, it is. If you are local, I cannot recommend it, especially if you've listened to this conversation and you're like, wow, I've been to every provider. No one's kind of dug deep like this. Highly recommend going and seeing Dr. Jim just to see if we can get a different perspective. So thank you so much for this conversation. I loved it. I cannot wait to get it out so everybody can learn more. But thank you so much for coming on, and I'm sure we'll have you on the show again.
Anytime.
Thanks, Dr. Jim.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope this information was valuable and that you share it with a friend or family member who is struggling to find answers to their health issues and they want help moving forward with their healing journey. If you want to keep the conversation going, follow me on Instagram at @drmercedescook. To request a consultation to work together, head to uppercervicalsd.com. I appreciate you tuning in and I look forward to seeing you here next week to dive into the next topic together.